Let's go. We got Martha in the hotel. We got 50 coming to us from the stadium. I'm in building 5, floor number 2, room number 67, Bristol, Connecticut, the mothership. So, boys, we got to get some stuff going down. KR, let me start with you. Today, Pulmonary has retired.
Yeah, you know, obviously there's something that over the last couple of days, frankly the last couple of weeks, has kind of been rumored. I had heard earlier this week that it was definitely going down, so I'm not really surprised at all. I guess the only thing I have to say is, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we do this job and you kind of get to know people in this business, and Paul, frankly, and I'm sure Aaron will echo these same sentiments, but you know, Paul really is one of those people that I'm going to miss in college baseball. I mean, he was a guy that always had an excellent relationship with. You know, the guy always seemed to kind of have a smile on his face. And I'm going to miss him in college baseball. Obviously, he had a lot of success at LSU getting the national championship. You know, I don't think people realize a guy, you know, had almost a 700 winning percentage in the Southeastern Conference and the SEC West. I mean, that's hard to do, boys. And yes. So I would hope LSU fans, as he kind of departs, kind of look back at not what happened this year. And you know, they still got a chance. They get in, they still have a chance to make a run, but not what happened this year. But look at what he's done in past years. The guy's had a hell of a career when you look at LSU and Notre Dame. So yeah. I'm going to miss Coach Maneri in this game, and I hope, hopefully, as he steps away, he finds happiness in whatever he's doing.
Yeah, hey, and I'll come back to you. We can talk candidates real quickly. Fitzy, do you have a Coach Maneri memory or reflection?
You know, I just
want to
say that he just has a naturally kind of fatherly presence about him, which I imagine serves him really well when it comes to mentoring young men. But I mean, you know, it's funny, I guess this is, I don't know about this, it's kind of a private story, but like the people in Baton Rouge are hard, and yeah, they're hard on Paul. They're hard on the media. I mean, like, and I think at one point he kind of sensed that like I was letting them get under my skin. And I remember him like, I think he might have put his arm around my shoulders and said, "Hey, man, like, don't even worry about it. Like, it's just like, it's not worth it." And, you know, he just like offered advice, you know, and I was in the business for a while. I knew him well. Like, I don't, you know, like, but he just is, he's a caring guy. And I think he cares how people are holding up. And that was just one of those weird things that stuck with me. He's just a really wonderful man. And I'm sure we'll see him around at the ABCA convention every year forever, like his dad. So we're not going to lose touch with him, but we'll miss having him as a head coach in the SEC. He was a perfect fit for that job, just with his personality and his magnetism and his ability to handle the pressure cooker. Boy, it's special.
Yeah, I'll give you guys this reflection. So, and then Kendall, I'll come to you as you kind of fast forward that job. You know, Paul took over for Notre Dame at Notre Dame after my coach Pat Murphy, and so you know, there's that natural rivalry there. You know, and so anyway, but of course there was no rivalry because Paul's the most wonderful guy ever, right? Like you just couldn't ever be mad at him. And I just, you know, I think about 1,500 wins, how incredible that is. I think about him taking Notre Dame to Omaha in 2002. I think about this guy at a job like LSU where the demands are so high. From 2008 to 2017, LSU was the top 8 seed, 8 out of 10 years. In that
league, pretty good.
I mean, like, ridiculous, right? Like, you talk about rarefied air. I mean, you're just amazing. And so the story I want to tell you guys, in 2002, we took our Arizona State team up to play Notre Dame. The first time Pat Murphy had gone back. We were really young. Pedroia is a freshman. Ethier is a sophomore. Ethier actually broke his wrist in the game. But, you know, Paul was always such a great guy, but I played against them. We played Air Force when I was in college, and they were scrappy, just like you think. But I never coached against them until that night. And the thing that hit me between the eyes is Paul, and I think it's underrated about Paul, he was a really good and feisty competitor. Like, Notre Dame got after our butts that night. Like, yeah, you were on your heels a little bit. Like, dang, they play hard. Like, it was up-tempo, hit and run. Like, it just, because Paul's such a nice guy, you think the competition's going to be nice. And he was like, up in our business in a good way. Like, it was, and I never forgot that. Like, hey, don't let the gentleman of Paul Maneri confuse you. This dude competes. Like, this dude is showing up to win. And, of course, you know, it's 1,500 wins. So,
Yeah, don't let Paul's nice guy demeanor, fool you. It's kind of funny. I've been talking to people around that program for a few years now about it, and they said when LSU's playing bad, he is one of the more demanding coaches they think they've ever seen. So don't let his nice guy demeanor fool you. The guy's still a hell of a competitor.
No doubt. Yeah. Hey, KR, what do you got for candidates? What gives? I know you wrote about it, but what do you got?
So I actually think that kind of segued really nicely into this. We talked about how even LSU fans were kind of a little hard on him about something he wrote, and that's kind of one of the things that when I look at this job, and let's just go ahead and get it out of the way. Kevin O'Sullivan's going to be their top candidate. Sully's a guy that they covet. He's a guy they're going to go after. The University of Texas went after Kevin O'Sullivan. They failed, but you know what? Hey, they shot their shot, right? And so I give them a lot of credit for doing that. It sounds like LSU is going to do that. And from what I'm being told, it sounds like LSU is willing to spend between $1.6 and $1.9 million to get Kevin O'Sullivan. That gives you a shot. And so the thing I look at with this job, though, Runes and Bit, is if you're Kevin O'Sullivan, you take a step back and look at this LSU job. So the positive of making the move, right? When I look at Florida versus LSU, there's no doubt Florida is an amazing program. So this is the positive for LSU here. When I look at those two programs, there's no doubt Florida is a great program, but if Sully could win 8 straight national championships at Florida, and in the grand scheme of things, it's just not going to matter that much there.
Unless he brings Tim Tebow back.
Well, exactly. It just doesn't matter there. And that's not disrespecting their baseball fans, because they have plenty of them. But in the overall culture of the University of Florida, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you go to LSU and you win national championships and you compete for national championships, you're the king. You're Mark Etheridge on bracketology. You're the Nerdmaster General of Baton Rouge over there. If you're Kevin O'Sullivan and you compete for national championships. And so I think that's one thing when you look at that job, you've got a chance to kind of be the man. You've got a chance to go to a ballpark where there's going to be 12,000 people there when you've got Arkansas in town. And so that's the positive. The negative would be for me is be careful what you wish for. You're in Florida. You're getting the top dudes in that state every single year. You're winning at an elite level every single year. You've got a brand new ballpark. You've got an AD in Scott Strickland who supports the hell out of you, pays you well, gives you anything you want. Just be careful what you wish for, because you go to Baton Rouge, and let's say you have a rocky first season, there's no honeymoon in Baton Rouge, boys. They're gonna be on you wide on rice. So
you better be ready to go. Yeah.
So right. At the end of the day, we'll see what Sully decides here. I mean, after following the Texas search as extensively as I did, I'm hesitant to say that he would take the job, but he's definitely the top candidate. I would keep an eye on Tony Vitello, Cliff Godwin. I think they're gonna kick the tires on Jim Schlossnagel, though I like Gainham's chances on Jim Schlossnagel. But ultimately, it's going to be Sully's job to turn down, and I'm fascinated to see what he does. I know Aaron's opinion on Sully and LSU is a little bit different than mine.
What do you think, Fitzy?
I think I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, yeah. Hey, everyone likes to be liked. I think Sully likes to be courted. I think he likes the idea of coaching at a place where baseball really, really matters. Which, I mean, Kendall's right. It doesn't really, really matter in Florida the way it really, really matters in Baton Rouge and in Texas, for that matter. The difference between Texas and LSU is you're still in the SEC. It's a historic job. It's a premium job, but you're still in the SEC. I think that was probably the thing about Texas that's less appealing. As great as Texas is and the history of it and everything else, I think the Big 12 and the SEC are different animals. But I think Florida's the best job in the country because – I mean, that intensity of the fan base cuts both ways. And
Yes. Even
Maneri, I mean, as good as he was at dealing with it, it was stressful for him too. I mean, when the fans expect you to win the national championship every single year and you can get to Omaha, you can get to the Final Four and it's a disappointment. I mean, that kind of sucks. I'll be honest. You can have it. I don't want that job. Give me Gainesville.
Yeah. It's interesting, guys, the home field advantage that you have in a regional, a super regional, what you just said, Fitzy, is spot on. KR, you said it the same way. Be careful what you wish for. That home field advantage is really awesome and really not awesome at the same time. That enthusiasm does not go away.
It's kind of funny, and I know Paul wouldn't care that I tell this story, but, I remember a few years ago, I was sitting there with Paul, when we were talking about LSU, this is probably 4 or 5 years ago, we were talking about like how cool of a job it is, like how cool of a place it is to coach. But he said, you know what, there are some interesting things about this job, you know, not necessarily negative, but like just in terms of the demanding nature of it. I remember he told me after they won the championship in 2009, you know, they had like a local like Lions Club or some sort of meeting where there were like 800 people there. And he said he's up there speaking at this meeting. And he said, you know, they go around to ask questions. Well, they hand some older guy that, you know, the microphone, the guy raises his hand and he grabs a microphone and says, hey, coach, congratulations on the national championship. We sure do look forward to winning back to back next year. You know, and he said he kind of took a step back. Like, in a way, it's nice that, like, they want to win so many national championships. But in a way, it's like, hey, take a step back and enjoy the hell of this championship, guys. Like, what are we doing?
Oh, that's so good. Hey, boys, we're gonna run out of time because my tech game here is 2 outs in the seventh. But let's bop around a little bit. That's good stuff. Hey, by the way, is that Brock Jones?
That's
really
Brock Jones. Stanford's knocking on the door to a top 8 seed, boys.
I got the coolest text from Brendan Beck last week because I was the only one on our staff that picked Stanford, and Brendan Beck, their ace pitcher who dealt last night, sent me a cool text saying, thanks for backing us. Stay with us. It was awesome.
Hey, spoiler alert. And I know Aaron will agree with me on this. Spoiler alert. If Stanford wins tonight, I think we're making the flip. I think we're putting Stanford as a top 8 national seed. And they deserve it.
Well, I was already arguing for that last night and Monday. Like, I've been arguing for it all week. As soon as they won that Oregon series, I think they should be in the top 8. And yes, assuming they win this series.
Tech versus Mississippi State. Do you guys have a strong opinion on Tech versus Mississippi State in the 8 or 9 slot or 10 slot?
I don't know what Aaron thinks, but I mean, at this point, you got to start considering TCU. I mean, TCU's going to play. He's going to play.
I'm moving TCU up. Like, yeah, I guess TCU, Tech, Mississippi State, those three. Where do we stand on that?
So, I mean, right now, I would lean TCU, Stanford, Mississippi State, maybe. I don't know. Texas, I don't know. Either way, I have TCU and Stanford ahead of those two teams right now.
The fact that TCU did actually tie for regular season title in the Big 12, I know they didn't get the number one seed because they lost a series to Texas, but I mean, they were bad the last couple of weeks, but if they rebound and, you know, continue to make this run in Oklahoma City after going 17-7 in the Big 12, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think I would have them probably in that 7 spot or 8 spot in Stanford.
If Tech loses to K-State, are they out as a top 8?
It would be tough.
I think so.
It'd be tough
because Mississippi State's above them at that point.
Maybe, right. But I mean, TCU's playing, TCU would play if they play for the championship. I think they're a top 8 no matter what.
Hey, what about Fairfield? Looks like Fairfield's going to go 1-2 in that. Where do you stand on them?
I don't know. I mean, I would have Fairfield in. I think anytime you put together that kind of a regular season campaign. As Aaron kind of argued with the top 25 a while back, if you only lose one game in the regular season, I mean, I don't care what league you're in for the most part, like, you should be in.
Vincey?
Yeah, I got them in. I mean, I don't know where they'd be seated, whether a 4 seed, whatever, but I got them in.
Yeah. Hey, where do you guys stand on Louisville versus the 3 bubble SEC teams, Georgia, Alabama, LSU? Is there congestion there, or is it pretty clear for you guys?
I don't think it's clear for me at all in Alabama and Louisville. I mean, after Alabama got whipped up on by Tennessee today, I mean, here's the deal. Like, I don't have any conviction in Alabama or Louisville, but like who are you going to put in? I mean, at this point, the bubble is very small. So you're almost, in a way, like, deep down, you're almost kind of hoping there's some stolen bids so the bubble is not so weak. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Fitz, you can take this. So I'm curious where Louisville compares to those 3 SEC teams, and I'm curious your order of those 3 SEC teams, LSU, Georgia, Alabama.
Ultimately, you know, I think the latter is going to shift, and probably at least 2 of those 3 teams are out anyway. Once some of these bids start disappearing, and Fairfield would be one team that I would take over any of them just based on the season they had. And I know it's the MAC, and you put them in the SEC, maybe they finished 13th. I don't care, 35-1 or wherever it was. I think they just plain deserve it. So there's one right there. You slide everybody down a spot and stick them in there. If like Northeastern, let's say, loses in the CAA. That's another one. You stick in, you slide everything down a spot. So for me, none of those teams, that Louisville, LSU, or Georgia, I wouldn't have any of them in. Assuming that these bids start to disappear. Right now, I would probably have Louisville at the back of the three, just based on the fact that they got screwed up three times in the last 4 weeks. And, you know, it's a 74 RPI. Not that that matters a lot in the ACC, but it's also 12th out of the 14 ACC teams in RPI. So that is a useful tool for comparing them, you know, within their conference because they play similar schedules. So for me, I think Louisville's done. And my connection appears to be bad here. Sorry, guys.
No, you're good. We can still hear you.
Fitz. Yeah, you're good.
Oh, maybe you can't hear us.
I struggle with LSU and Georgia. They both, you know, finished five games under 500 in the SEC in aggregate, you know, regular season and conference tournament. That's usually very dicey. I know Florida got in with that 2 years ago. Kentucky did not a year or two before that. So I think that's very dicey for both those teams.
Yeah, I think the Florida thing's so different because remember, Florida that year was 5-1 versus Florida State and Miami, who were, you know, legitimate teams. And so to me, like, I just put that 5-1 on top of their 13 yeah. and 18. And it's like, okay, now they're 18 and 19 against a vicious schedule. Hey, let me throw this at you guys. We'll do a couple more things and then we'll wrap so we can get back to our games. So to me, the 20 hosts, the four that I see is out are, and I'm curious your thoughts. So Charlotte out to me, Pitt out. You were going to pick between Southern Miss and Louisiana Tech. It looks like Southern Miss right now because I think they've advanced. And then, oh gosh, now I'm spacing the
fourth. Gonzaga.
So I have Gonzaga in. You have Gonzaga out.
Oh, no. I thought you were just talking about candidates for those last few spots.
Who are the four teams that have to come out? One of the Conference USA teams, Louisiana Tech, Southern
Louisiana
Miss.
Louisiana Tech, Charlotte, Pitt. South Carolina, Pitt.
South Carolina, that's it.
I think Southern Miss is right now. I mean, I would have Southern Miss in there. What I would caution people, though, is even though I like Southern Miss in that 16 spot, and that's where we had them in the projections today, I mean, I do have a caveat here in the possibility of Old Dominion going to South Carolina as a one. I don't think South Carolina has any business hosting. I don't think they deserved it. But, I mean, you got if ODU is 13-6 versus top 50, they've got a top 12 RPI, they kind of – they've earned a one seed, right? And so you've got to send them somewhere. So – it's either they go to Spokane as a one, which I think Gonzaga's earned a one seed at this point, or they go to Columbia. And so either way, what I don't want to see is the Zags get screwed somehow, because at the end of the day, the committee tells these mid-majors every single year, go out and play good teams in non-conference, win some of those games. And what did the Zags do? They went out non-conference, and guess what? They won a lot of those games. They deserve it. If they don't get a top 16, that just tells a lot of those mid-majors, especially in the West Coast, that no matter what you do, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm with you, Kendall. Hey, let's wrap on this, guys. This was good. Fitzy, I'm going to start with you. We're each, the three of us are at three different tournaments, mostly because of American Airlines. But Fitzy, you're in Charlotte. Kendall, you're in Hoover. And I'm in Oklahoma. Well, I'm in theory in Oklahoma City. So, Fitzy, give me – so each of us, I want one your one loudest observation from the tournament you're at. Fitz, you go first. Loudest thing you've seen in Charlotte.
Virginia and Duke are really, really dangerous.
Yeah, don't want to see them right now.
Virginia feels to me like an Omaha team with the offense now cooking and the pitching, I think, is legit. I mean, I'll take Andrew Abbott against just about anybody. I mean, I think he's an easy All-American. He's a stud. The bullpen is really good. You know, now you got Zach Geloff going. You've got, you know, a bunch of these guys we've been waiting on. They're really good at Duke, too. I mean, man, it's just a veteran group of position players. And as the season's gone on, their arms have matured. And they got power arms, and real arms. And, you know, and they figured it out. I mean, the Jack Carries of the world, the Marcus Johnsons, you know, you've seen the Sky Rays. You know, Jimmy Loper's made a jump. I mean, all those pieces fit really well together. Luke Fox. I mean, watch out for Luke Fox. He hasn't pitched yet. You know, he'll probably pitch tomorrow, but freshman lefty that I think could be a first round pick in a couple of years. So really high on both those teams' chances. Obviously, NC State is the third real hot team here, and love their particular group, their offense, their defense. Still wonder if they have enough arms when we get to June. So I might actually, at this very moment, if you had to ask me which ACC team would I bet on to make potential Omaha runs, I think I would bet on Virginia and Duke before all of them.
Yeah, I love it. KR, one big observation from Hoover.
Yeah, I tell you what, the Florida Gators might be back, boys. I mean, they've played really well in this tournament. Nathan Hickey hit a blast dead center yesterday. You look at the job that Sterling Thompson has done. Chris Armstrong's been really good in this tournament. Judd Fabian had a couple of really nice at-bats yesterday. And I think the biggest thing for me is when you look at Florida's weekend rotation, you know, Tommy Mace and Hunter Barco threw well. But how about Franco Aleman yesterday in that key game? You know, he threw, what, 7 innings and only gave up one run, or he might not have given up a run. I thought it was one run. But, you know, he had really good feel for his slider. He was 91-94 throughout the whole game. And, you know, Sully said, like, hey, if we're going to get to Omaha, like, he's going to have to be a dude. And, like, yesterday he was a dude. So that was a big development for me. And then Ole Miss, you know, when they lost Gunnar Hoagland, we kind of all thought, oh, these guys are in trouble a little bit on the mound. But, you know, Doug Nikhazy threw well. Drew McDaniel was really good yesterday. And then today, Tyler Myers had thrown 7 shutout innings against Vanderbilt. So all of a sudden, you know, Ole Miss starting to figure things out a little bit from a pitching standpoint. They're dangerous because they're really hitting right now. Kevin Graham hit another home run today after hitting a home run yesterday. So Ole Miss rolling offensively, and they're starting to figure it out on the mound after losing Gunnar Hoagland.
I love it. Gentlemen, from the Big 12 tournament, I gave you Parker Scott starting tonight for Oklahoma State. I'll tell you, similar to your observation, Kendall, TCU appears to have their groove back. They've been very impressive. You know, they started Jacob Metter in the first game, and, you know, he's not a normal guy for them. And their offense just said, you know what, we got it. They, you know, Metter was not good. They won anyway. They beat Tech today. TCU seems really, really good. Fitz, you seemed like you had something.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I showed you guys, you know, the setting before we leave here. I mean, it's a pretty good
looks like a painting.
Spot, isn't it? Right here,
it's really awesome.
Right here in Uptown Charlotte for you.
Fitzy, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm still partial to Durham, so I can channel my inner hipster.
Of course.
Charlotte is a good backup.
Hey,
Charlotte's a really good spot. But
yeah, 2 good spots. Go ahead, KR.
Hey, I was going to add, some Arkansas fan was mad that we didn't talk about the Arkansas last night. But how about the Hogs last night? I'll tell you what.
Good.
I was talking to Fit about this earlier this morning. But I don't think I've seen a team make Kumar Rocker work that hard in my life. I mean, they were making him throw everything over the plate. If it didn't go over the plate, they weren't swinging at it. The Hogs looked really good. Patrick Wiglander did not have the kind of start that Aaron saw when he saw the Hogs against South Carolina. But it may not matter with this team, guys. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, but you look at this offense, you get to TD Ameritrade. Can you imagine, like, bringing Kevin Cobbs out at the graveyard known as TD Ameritrade if Arkansas has a lead? Like, I'm not saying he's, like, totally invincible, but, like who's going to score runs on that guy at TD Ameritrade?
Yeah, I think we lost Fitzy there, Kara, but you're right. Just put a bow on that. Arkansas fans, go ahead and start looking into reservations for Omaha. Like,
you might want to be there for week 2.
Yeah, that's right. Well said. Kendall, look at us. We were like a NASCAR team. We just threw this thing together in 20
seconds.
Man. We did 20 minutes. We're in. We're out.
I hate to not be at the ballpark, but it's a big news day. I've been watching games all day long. And yes, actually walked into the Metro Atlantic final as the Ryder Bronx got in for the first time since 2010. I want to say the last time they were actually in the Austin Regional. So maybe I'll see those guys again this weekend, next weekend.
So Ryder, that was the final. So Fairfield had worked
Fairfield
their way back.
Is out. Yeah, yep. Fairfield is out.
Yeah, interesting. All right, KR, good job. Make sure you keep Martha charged.
You got it, brother.
We'll try and knock one.
I'll try to keep Berkey and KP and company out of trouble down here in Hoover. I know those guys are trouble
makers. Seriously, buckle their seatbelts, for God's
sake. Later, bud.
All right, man. Have a good one.